2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
The fantastic Chris and Kira. Just to clear up, there's nothing but love from the 2F or from the Game On team for Chris and Kira. And I know Kira's keen for maybe a bit of a boxing row, but we're lovers, not fighters. We're willing.
Danica, we have them rattled. They're on the ropes. What are you doing?
No.
You're trying to lull them into a false sense of security.
This is a white flag. This is an olive branch. There needs to be a little bit more love between us. We're willing to take them on, Marie, in Connect Four or Double, but I'm not scrapping Kira. She looks nasty. She'll go for me.
I don't know. You know, these people are all talk. We're more of an acting kind of crew.
Absolutely. It's Wednesday, the 7th of April.
Coming up on Game On tonight, Pearl Slattery joins us ahead of two international friendlies.
The captain, Katie McCabe, lets the ball go early up towards the run of Denise O'Sullivan, and now Barrett for Ireland, and there's the lead goal. The Republic of Ireland take the lead after 13 minutes. Amber Barrett with the goal. Ireland in front in Athens.
Richie Sadler joins Pearl to talk Champions League.
Cross. Breaking ball for Vinicius to chase. Vinicius took it well and finishes.
We'll also talk men's health with Richie.
We'll also talk to Paralympian Patrick Monaghan about Tokyo.
And we have our last look ahead to the US Masters in Augusta with Greg Allen.
20 under by Stenson at the open in 16. 20 under by Jason Day. And the 2020 Masters. The long-awaited Masters has a long-awaited champion in Dustin Johnson.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Well, how you doing, Marie? Disappointing night for you last night. Have you recovered?
It was a tough night, Danica. I'm not going to lie. It really was. I think I built it up a little bit too much in my mind. I was buying into all the commentary that it was going to be an easy game for Liverpool, that Real Madrid were at half strength. They were missing their two big defenders, that they didn't have anyone that can score goals. I just fell for it hook, line and sinker.
It's amazing how it happens, though. And when it comes crushing, you know, when it all falls in around you, you kind of think, how did I think like that after the year we've kind of put down? You know, why am I surprised?
That was it exactly. It was the hope that killed you, the expectation, the belief, everything that goes with it. But look, it was a good game by Real Madrid. They completely deserved to win. They outplayed them. Serious headaches now, I think, for Jurgen Klopp about team selection, about tactics, about a lot of these players. It was just so many individual errors. Team performance as well was pretty bad. But I think the biggest problem is that the players themselves, just as individual footballers, seem to be making way too many errors, and I don't know why they're doing that. Look, we spoke a bit about crowds and Munster and the importance of them the other day, and maybe if Liverpool had their crowds back and Van Dijk and maybe a couple of other players, then they'd be doing better.
Yeah, individual errors though, Marie, it is, honestly, it's a blight on games. If everyone makes one mistake, or everyone disciplines another one, that we used to always find, if everyone racks up one penalty, you're on the wrong side or the wrong count of it, so it matters. But you know what I love, like you are now, a little bit disappointed, but I can just watch you over the next week grow and kind of go, Liverpool in the last leg, it's all to come.
Dunica, you just can't beat the comebacks. You think you're down and out, but there is one more leg, there is another chance, and until that is gone, I am picturing the Champions League trophy, the season saved, Klopp redeeming himself, the players redeeming themselves, 2021 not being that bad.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be going into it with Pearl and Richie very shortly. There was news today, Marie, from the RFU. They have confirmed that they will make 20 redundancies. We probably heard the news before. These will affect 20 non-playing members of the staff will lose their jobs. Philip Brown did come out last October and reveal that there's a deficit at 35.7 million, and without crowds in the stadiums, we're always going to see this side of the sport. And look, I think anyone that's involved in business or any form of business would see this, and I think we're seeing it in the sporting side of business as well. And you don't have to look too far away as well. Exeter Chief announced that they are going to lose 2.26 million this year. They would have been looking forward to holding Premiership matches, like semi semi-finals, two Champion League knockout games, which would have led to huge revenue. So I think as welcome as the CVC money has been in rugby, we're starting to see the other side of it now, where it really is affecting. And Marie, look, to be honest with you, you can see it from the professional side of it, but people losing their jobs have put in unbelievable work on the admin side. You would feel for them today. I know it's redundancies, and hopefully everyone can, you know, have a good outcome from it, but it's always disappointing to see. And I think you have to think of those people that selflessly worked so that teams can go out and put in big performances.
Yeah, I think we mentioned a few times over the last 6 months to a year how bad the consequences of this were going to be, and how it was going to take a little bit of time to see them, and we're beginning to see them now as the different sporting bodies and associations are filing accounts and coming to terms with the losses, and also the projected losses for the next few months, things that they thought would be coming in that just clearly aren't going to be coming in for quite some time, and just trying to have to deal with it and stay afloat, because that's the reality, Donegal. They are businesses, but it is really sad. Lots of people that I have worked with from comms and media and admin point of view are going to be suffering consequences in many organisations now, so it is quite difficult. But as you said, you know, the key for them had been getting the teams out and getting playing, and I think if we could get some crowds back now, it would really help, but that doesn't look likely anytime soon. And potentially more bad news today, because UEFA has been told by the FAI and the government that they can't give any assurances on spectators attending Euro 2020 games in Dublin. So this puts the hopes of hosting these matches here in Dublin in very serious doubt. So all of the 12 host cities had to submit their plans today on what number of fans could attend matches in their stadiums, and then UEFA are going to examine these plans and then decide on what they're going to do with the host cities. But Ireland couldn't give any assurances that there would be any crowds in games in the summertime, so I would have to probably predict that they might end up moving those games out to a place where they can sell tickets and take money in. Some cities have been able to say that they can accommodate crowds. Spain, Scotland, Copenhagen, all these places think that they're going to be able to have crowds in, that they're going to be able to sell tickets. So when other countries have been able to do it and Dublin isn't and Ireland isn't, you'd have to just think that that could probably be it for the chances of hosting the Euros here in Dublin. So more disappointment, I'm afraid.
Yeah, and it would have been nice, Marie, wouldn't it? You know, just again, of course, when there's an interest in it and you see the Aviva there, you know, with big games in it, of course we'd love it if there was Irish teams in it, but I think we love an occasion, don't we?
Just, you know. Yeah, I don't care who's in it. Like, if it's on our doorstep, it's a bit of fun and there's going to be people around and you're going to a match, like, bring it on. I'd travel anywhere for that. So
Absolutely. That's
like, Ireland aren't in it, and that does probably soften the blow quite a bit, but at the same time it would be nice to have some sort of a major tournament, because anyone who's been to a major tournament, whether your country are involved or not, they are good fun. It's a party atmosphere, people are around. But I suppose, look, Donegal, the reality is that we are in a pandemic and we are all trying to stay safe, and the best thing that can be done now is put public health first. Now, staying with football and matches, there are some games for the women's team coming up. So the Republic of Ireland are going to play two international friendlies this week. They're going to host Denmark in Tala and then travel to Belgium for another game, and their World Cup qualifying campaign draw will be at the end of the month, and they'll get going on that very, very shortly. But this will mark the start of their preparations for it. They'll have put the disappointment of not making the Euros behind them and will be fully focused on trying to get to a World Cup. And to go through how Vera Pauw's squad is shaping up ahead of these two games, I'm delighted to say that Pearl Slattery, Shelburne captain, joins us on the line. Pearl, look, I think it's probably a bit like how we felt with the men's team when they were starting their World Cup campaign, albeit that didn't go the way we wanted to from the start. But it does feel like now it's kind of the dawn of a new era, a new campaign, a new start, some new faces and names coming into this squad, and a chance again to qualify for a major tournament, which is the ultimate goal for this women's football team.
Hi, Marie. Hi, Donica. Yeah, look, spot on. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think it's, you know, forgetting about the disappointments of the last campaign, but most importantly, learning from it and, you know, setting goals now on this, I suppose, new opportunity now to try qualify for the World Cup in 2023. And international football is funny because people think, oh, well, you know, the qualifying campaign is September, but in international football, that comes around very, very quickly. So, you know, a doubleheader like we're getting this week against Denmark and Belgium, so important for Vera. You know, anybody that's involved in international squads will tell you, you know, you're not in enough with players as it is. So when you get the time, it's really making that efficient and making use of it. And I think over the two games, Virta will be looking at, you know, seeing everybody really. So as I said, the new names have come in, you know, the names that are always in, and just an opportunity throughout the two games to have a look at everybody and get this exciting new campaign underway. And I spoke to you before on this, you know, the sport in this country and in terms of football and the women's game, you know, we really do need to qualify, I think, to take the game to the next level participation wise and I think, you know, with the best person in the job and Vera, and, you know, please God, now we can all be booking flights in a few years' time to Australia and New Zealand to see the girls play.
You won't have to ask us twice, Pearl, is he there? So I heard Vera being interviewed by Tony O'Donoghue, and she mentioned that she feels like she's really only getting going with this project. She's committed to it now, signed a new contract. Where does she need to improve? Where does this Republic of Ireland women's team need to improve if they do want to achieve that goal?
Yeah, I listened to that interview. It was actually lovely. I think she said something like that. She didn't feel she was finished with the squad and with the country, and I think that's lovely. I think she's been a breath of fresh air since she's come in. You know, I think she's done great work the last few years. I think the most important thing is when you look at the European campaign for the Euros, it's learning from those mistakes, Marie, and, you know, international football is cruel, and you have to learn very quickly that, you know, little mistakes can cost you. So I think if we can start to cut out those little mistakes, and I think, you know, players playing abroad and, you know, some of the women's national league team are players, you know, playing at a high standard every week, training more, as you said, playing with boys and just being at a high standard whenever they do come in and taking every training session with such importance. And I suppose just, you know, trying to gather Vera and Eileen's philosophy and what we want to do. And I think, you know, everything they want to do and to get us going forward is obviously learning from the previous campaign and trying to cut out those little mistakes. And look, in international football, that's very hard. It's, you know, it is cruel. You know, it's in terms of mistakes and stuff like that, and having to play and make decisions very quickly, it can be cruel. But I think we'll definitely learn from that. I was on the show with the Germany game, but if you look at that campaign, it wasn't really the Germany games that cost us. It was Greece and the Ukraine game. So I just think, you know, if you get countries like that in the World Cup qualifiers, that, you know, you're nullifying those mistakes going forward.
Pearl, you mentioned that the window is so small for you to look after those, and Vera's in charge of the big message, but the onus on you as players to look after those, like you were saying, those small mistakes and nearly self-policing yourself as a squad.
Yeah, it's so important, Donnie, because, like, look, a majority of squads abroad and they'll train a lot, but there's certain players, like, you know, there's a lot of women's national league players as well, and it's doing, I suppose, you know, and looking after yourself when you're not in and around the squad. So, you know, obviously the players in this country, so whether it's, you know, they can go and train with boys, and I know Vera is big on that one, just looking after yourself as well as an individual, so whether it's training more and just, yeah, making use of your time as best you can. As I said, the girls that are abroad and playing in full-time environments, you know, we're lucky enough that they have that, but it's making sure everybody in the squad now is up to that standard. And again, that time away, I suppose, from Vera and looking after yourself is so important.
Vera was at a couple of the Women's National League games as well, Pearl, so she's keeping an eye out on the talent here at home.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Great to see her at games. I know Eileen gets to a lot, and obviously Vera has to go home and stuff like that and look at other games abroad. But I think it gave the whole league, every player that was playing on Saturday, whether it was in her game against Cork or the DLR and Westwood game, it just gives you a massive boost. It gives the league a boost. It gives players a boost. And I think now we know what League of Ireland TV, you know, everybody's watching, but to have the manager, you know, the women's national team at the games is so important, especially for the girls that are in and around the squad. You know, there's a point to prove there. And she's shown that she does bring in players from the league, so yeah, it was great to see her at the games, I have to say.
And Pearl, Vera brought in a few players as well that are Irish eligible, and they're just coming into the camp, and we're going to see how they get on and what they think of the camp. Do you think that this is what she needs to be doing to maybe widen the net to see what other players are out there and see if she can entice them in, or is it a bit of a tricky tightrope to walk?
Yeah, like I heard someone speaking about this during the week, and they were kind of saying, you know, if you're bringing in, you know, players like Emily Murphy and stuff like that, you're probably preventing Irish players getting the opportunity. So I see that argument, but I think, you know, in fairness to Vera and Eileen, you know, they are looking, they look at this country, they look everywhere. And I, to be honest,
personally, I see no harm. I know we always get caught back to the Grealish and all that situation on the boys' side, but I think if there's girls out there, you know, and they have relatives and they can play for this country and they want to play, I think it's the most important thing. So, you know, Emily Murphy, I think she was previously at Chelsea, she's now at Birmingham, Yavifa, that's at Glasgow. So I'm sure they're of a good standard, and I think if they really want to commit to this country, why not? And if they can add to the squad, you know, even better. And that's what Vera wants. You want the top quality squad, people playing at a certain standard. And, you know, if these girls could come in and do that, and as I said, they want to play for Ireland, which is the most important, then why not?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they get on anyway, because I think with something like that, I suppose it's nearly comes down to the individual and see if they can commit, because it is a big decision to make no matter what. And yeah. Pearl, you mentioned that a lot more people are tuning in to watch the women's games on LOI TV. Well, you're certainly delivering on the quality. Another 15 goals this weekend across the game, so it's been really entertaining.
Yeah, I think it's been a great start the last 2 weeks, and I have to say, you know, props go to everybody, you know, the sponsors, the Women's National League Department, you know, the League of Ireland TV has been exceptional in terms of, you know, family, friends. I was even speaking to the legend herself, Olivia O'Toole, there last week, and she was telling me that she had the Manchester United match on her telly, then she had the Galway game on one of our laptops, and then her game on another one. So just to hear people are tuning in like that, and as I said, family, friends, and it's just really grown the profile. And I think when you have games and they're live and it's free, which is massive, you can plug it into the telly, I just think it's only going to do, you know, one thing for the profile, and it's going to raise it. But it's just brilliant, you know, the promotion, you know, even like goals of the week are coming out straight away after matches. Just the whole promotion, I think, around the league, Marie, has been excellent. And yeah, in fairness, there's been a good standard. I think every game now in the league has got to be competitive, and fair play to all the clubs, because they're raising the standards every year. That's what you want.
They really are. We've had a few texts in about Liverpool, Pearl, and none of them are good, I'm afraid. Somebody has said, tell that lady that Liverpool have no hope in the second leg. They are bad. I presume he's talking about me. Pearl, they were bad last night, to be fair to this texter.
It was tough to watch as a Liverpool fan. Like, I really didn't feel like a quarter final, did it? It was just like, when you look at, like, be fair, you know, the whole trend thing, he probably didn't do himself any justice last night. Even Naby Keita, he was poor. You know, in fairness, when I looked at the squad initially, Marie, I was surprised Thiago was dropped, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you go, right, in fairness, Klopp was probably seeing something in training, we'll go with this team. And it was just poor. I think Salah would be probably the only player, and Kabak at times, you know, did well, but just so poor. The goals were avoidable. Look, we've got the away goal. I think, is it possible? Are we still in it? As a Liverpool fan, I think we always believe, but in terms of, you know, bringing them back to Anfield without a crowd, I do worry. And I think we can score against them in the second leg, but can we stop them? I don't know. Look, we've made it an uphill battle now, but it was tough to watch as a fan, I think.
Richie Sadlier is with us as well. And Richie, you were pretty harsh on them last night, I thought.
Would you have disagreed with much I've said?
You were honest, Richie.
Truth hurts, Richie, okay?
Yeah, before the game, I mean, obviously we were really looking forward to the game. It's Real Madrid looking for a quarter-final, like, so you're expecting big things anyway. But the loss of Raphael Varane in the 24 hours before the game, you think that must unsettle them a little bit. It's disrupted their preparation for the game, and it meant now that three of their first-choice back four would be unavailable. And you think Liverpool at full strength, now, which of the four really good strikers were they going to pick? So we'd assumed they're going to really pressurise this Real Madrid defence, and whatever weaknesses are there, they'd be able to expose it. And we were just waiting and waiting and waiting for that to happen, and it didn't. And I remember sitting there at half time thinking, like, we didn't even have a shot in the first half that we could reflect on from Liverpool. And defensively, they looked weak, and in midfield, they really struggled to keep the ball. And Toni Kroos looked like a man playing against kids. Like, he was so good, he was so much quality in midfield. And I think all the things you expect Liverpool to do on a day when Liverpool are at us, like they press really effectively, they have an energy and a creativity, and they do have a quality there, but that's been missing in so many of the games, particularly since Christmas, and it was nowhere to be seen last night. So I wouldn't have a huge amount of confidence for their chances for the second leg, because, like, the scoreline is only one of the obstacles they have to overcome. There are others. They're still defensively weak, I think, in central areas. Their home results have been freakishly bad. I can't make any sense of that. I assume some bit of tiredness has kicked in because of the schedule and the demands on players, because so many have been unavailable. So a mountain to climb, and with an empty Anfield again, that's another thing that's going against them.
Pearl, we've been chatting about the defensive frailties for the season, but it was really exposed last night when we thought maybe over the last 3 weeks it had been fixed.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's for Pearl. Back down, Richie.
No, I think, look, I think the two lads at centre-back have done well, haven't they, the last few weeks. They had a rocky start, in fairness, but, you know, Trent has been, I suppose, in the limelight this week, which probably hasn't helped him. And I was actually intrigued to see how he would perform last night with being dropped and left out of the English squad, you know, and he probably didn't help himself. Robbo, you know, has done well. But I just think, looking at last night, it's summed up Liverpool's season, really, hasn't it? And as a fan, I'm just like, the sooner the better. This season's over and Virgil's back, but I think we all had a glimmer of hope that, you know, we could put the league to a, you know, to a side last night and think, well, this is probably our only hope. Well, it is our only hope of silverware, to go out, put on a, you know, a big performance, you know, show that intensity in their game, and I suppose try get to the Champions League final or the next round at least. But it was just so lethargic. It was so poor to watch at times. I couldn't believe it. I was literally in shock, you know. But yeah, look, I think Real Madrid were rootless, but again, I think some of the goals were so avoidable from Liverpool's point of view.
Yeah, we mentioned that at the top of the show. There was an awful lot of errors that probably was no need for. Richie, the other game then, Man City and Dortmund, and we kind of expected really that Man City would win, but I was surprised really at the fight that Borussia Dortmund put up.
Yeah, one of the things that's really disappointed me in this stage of the competition is why UEFA haven't staggered the games, because given that no one's going to attend them, we're all stuck at home, you would assume it suits everyone to have the games on a different kickoff time so we could all see them. So I obviously didn't get to see the game last night because they're working on the Liverpool one. The result was the one we expected to, like, all the talk today was about the referees' mistake, and I think Man City got away with that one. I think the goalkeeper was fairly dispossessed, the referee blew up too soon, VAR couldn't adjudicate because the game had been stopped, and you know, we know all the talking points from it, but it's a crucially important scoreline because I think Man City are looking so good. Like, it's going to take a hell of a lot to stop them.
Pearl, if you had a choice between De Bruyne or Haaland, you could only have one of them, which one would you pick?
Oh, Jesus. I'd probably, like, the minute I asked that, my head said De Bruyne. So I just think he is, everything he does, he's just class. Haaland is young, he's still a lot to give. I just think watching De Bruyne the last few years, look, he's the best midfielder in the world, in my opinion. He showed it last night. Some of his deliveries, he finished for the goal. He just really drives this Man City team. And I think, you know, I hate to say it, being a Liverpool fan, but could be their year serves the Champions League. I think if they're ever going to do it, it's a great opportunity. They're back to the City of, you know, 2-3 seasons ago, where they're nearly, you know, untouchable. They've that swagger about them again, and he's a big part to play, and I think...
They don't even need to start a striker these days. Richie, I do have high hopes tonight, though, for Bayern Munich and PSG. I was disappointed last night, but I think this is going to be a good game.
I think it, like, the quarterfinals of the Champions League, particularly I remember last season and previous season, but the standard of fixtures when this draw was made, if you're a football fan, you cannot wait for this fortnight of fixtures. So obviously the blow from Munich is they're missing Lewandowski up front, and I think that could be crucial. I think he's very little chance of making the second leg, although that's not certain yet. But PSG, like, they've so much pace up front. They're like Mbappe in the last round, like on his own, like hat-trick against Barcelona, showed for the umpteenth time just how good a player he is. So these are fixtures which are so difficult to call because of the quality of everyone involved. So it's going to be a belter of a game. And again, the frustration is we have to pick one of them to watch, so we can't watch both.
And we'll go to that one, Pearl. Porto taking on Chelsea. Chelsea lost for the first time under Thomas Tuchel last weekend, and they've even had a few training ground bust-ups. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, I've seen that. That result was absolutely bizarre, wasn't it, the weekend? I was watching that game and couldn't believe my eyes, some of the highlights, and I think they'll be looking for a reaction tonight. You know, especially under a manager like himself, I don't think he'll be best placed that result the weekend. And I don't know, little bust-ups like that don't look great, duty for team morale or environment. But I think if they go out and get a result tonight, you know, that's forgotten about the weekend, forgotten about. I think Porto are missing one or two of their strikers. I think Chelsea are still missing Kante. I think so. Anyway, they were missing him the weekend. It was a big loss. But I do fancy Chelsea. I do think, for some reason, I think they'll be too much for Porto.
Okay, well, Pearl, we're going to say goodbye to you because we're going to hang on to Richie because we have something very important to talk to him about after the break. Pearl, thanks so much. And just one final text in. Big shout out to all the Real Madrid and Granada fans out there. So they're all coming out of the woodwork today after their big luck, win Pearl. Last night. Thanks, Pearl. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we have a text in updating us on how our modern pentathlete athletes are getting on. Saif, Brazil is through to the final of the World Cup 2 in Sofia. She had finished in fourth place in the semi-final B, and the women's final is taking place on Friday. Arthur Lanigan O'Keefe is competing in the men's semi-final tomorrow, so we will be keeping across all of that. Now, Richie, we very rarely get serious on this show. Actually, usually when we get serious, it's when you're around, so why bother changing it? But you are on today. You're launching a campaign to encourage men to talk about erectile dysfunction, which is obviously something that doesn't get talked about very often.
It doesn't, no. Yeah, I was very happy to get involved in a campaign. It's called Talk ED, which, as you said, it's aimed at encouraging lads to talk about this topic in an open manner. And I think it follows on from a lot of research that was done, which outlined the number of Irish men that experienced difficulty in this area. But also, and this was the bit that really drew me in, obviously, as a psychotherapist, it's the number of men who have a reluctance or a discomfort or embarrassment or an awkwardness about talking about this issue. So the campaign isn't just about promoting discussion and conversation about the problem, but it's also about promoting the solutions, so the various supports and the treatments that are out there. So kind of the very clear message is whether you initiate the conversation with a therapist, a pharmacist, a GP, it's so important to start talking about this, and it can be so beneficial. So all the details of the campaign, you can check them out on Hector's Facebook page of all places.
Very good. And Richie, it is important we have these conversations. Like the stats in this report, 54% of us feel embarrassed discussing these with family members or friends. And that's something I certainly noticed. When I had a playing dressing room, there was always areas or people you could chat about stuff like this. You never really feel comfortable, well, I didn't, chatting with my friends and family. But having a peer group, you could. It's great that we can have this discussion.
I think it is, and I think just on a general point, sometimes a lot of us, maybe anyone brought up in Ireland, there's a discomfort or a reluctance, or we're uncertain about how you talk about sex. Like, what do you say? How much should you say about your personal life? And an issue like this, again, the research showed us, which maybe you'd intuitively gather, you'd guess anyway, that a lot of people are really uncomfortable to talk about this. And if you're going through anything, it doesn't really matter what it is, if you have something you're identifying as a problem and you cannot talk about it, so you can't say it to your partner, your friend, your doctor, whoever, well, it kind of keeps you stuck in the problem part. So you can't really access the solution if you don't first talk about it. So initiating conversations like this, and obviously we hope that a conversation like the one we're having now sparks off conversations among people who are listening, and that anyone who is impacted in by erectile dysfunction, that they're aware that there are treatments out there, there are solutions.
And Richie, just on a broader point, like, you're obviously working as a psychotherapist, it has been and has been a really tough time for people, putting even more importance on going out, talking to friends, trying to meet them, trying to get outside, just trying to have company conversations, tell people how they're feeling.
Absolutely. So obviously I'm seeing it in my therapy practice. I'm sure everyone of you are seeing it as well, and any conversations you have with neighbours, family, friends, with colleagues, there's the level of difficulty that we're all experiencing throughout the year. Obviously every one of us has differing levels of difficulty and challenges that we're all facing, but again, that thing of connecting in with others, that you can get some kind of support or some kind of connection, is so important, because it's very easy, given the restrictions that are on us all, that you find yourself quite isolated, you know, physically, and you're cut off from other people. And it can be difficult to ring people and talk, because, you know, small talk is difficult because none of us are doing anything that we can tell each other about. So many people are kind of cut off and feeling alone, and to really push against that, what would really, really help is to try and reach out and connect with others.
So this Talk ED campaign, Richie, like, just from all different areas, not only from physical education, but mental health, you might give us what it's looking to cover in terms of topics.
Yeah, so there are all so many different areas, kind of the medical and the physical side of things, the psychological things. My real interest was in the mental health side of things. I've worked with a lot of men in my practice over the years who have experienced difficulty in this area. And again, one of the things that comes out really, really strongly is how much of an impact it can have on a man's self-esteem or their feelings about themselves, the relationship they're in. It can impact their choices or their behaviours around how they might seek a relationship, or it might impact their desire to get into a relationship, because if they think this is an issue that they're going to encounter along the way, it can impact them. So there's so many different ways in which it can impact a person, but the real key thing is you're going to continue to be impacted by it if you deny yourself the opportunity of accessing support, and you can only do that when you start to talk about it. So go see a pharmacist, talk to a GP, talk to a therapist, talk to your parent or friends, whoever you want. If you can't get support by the person you're talking to, hopefully they'll signpost you towards the appropriate supports.
Richie, really great advice there for anyone who's listening in that might be struggling with any sort of a different problem, or just looking for someone to talk to, looking for a bit of advice. And you've pointed many people in the right direction. Thanks so much for taking our call, for talking about health and football. Good combination, Richie. We'll check in with you again soon.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by Paralympic athlete Patrick Monaghan. Patrick, how are things?
Not too bad, thanks yourself.
Not too bad at all now. We had a bit of a tough conversation with Richie Sadlier there, but we're out the other side of it, so we're grand now. So look, we've been chatting, I suppose, myself and Donica, to lots of people over the last 12 months, and we've been wondering and waiting and trying to figure out what is going to happen with the Olympics and the Paralympics, but it does feel like we're kind of on the home stretch now and looking forward to them.
Yeah, we're definitely seem to be in a better position than we were a couple of months ago. It's looking like they're going to go ahead. It's probably not going to be the normal games experience, but look, at this stage, we'll take anything we can get. So it's about competing at the end of the day. So have to continue preparing as it's gone ahead. And yeah, it's looking positive.
So what's life been like for you during a lockdown when everything has been so uncertain and difficult and trying to figure everything out?
I suppose it has its challenges, like anyone really. It hasn't been too bad for me. I live out in just outside Nay, so I'm near Mandela Park. I'm very grateful that I've been getting used to the track like over the last few years, really. But one positive for me, which is probably a negative for them, is unfortunately the course has been closed throughout lockdown. There's been no motor racing, so I've had the track to myself, really. So it's had its benefits as well, and I kind of feel that I've kind of had to take the benefits from it, really. If you get caught up in all the negative, it's really hard to motivate yourself. And look, it has been challenging. There's a lot of uncertainty, and there still is. But I've been lucky enough, and Sport Ireland as well, I suppose, they got elite athletes into gyms during level five. So I'm sure there's people that are a lot worse off than us. And obviously Toyota themselves, through doing our media work with them and the campaign for them, that's really helped as well. It's like we're on the home stretch now, and it feels like there is a game's going to happen. So hopefully, yeah, by the end of the summer, we'll get what we've been training for, really.
Patrick, that's a mindset as well, though, isn't it? For you to, you know, to find the opportunities to use Mondello Park. You know, there can be excuses too, but it sounds like you've used this as an opportunity to get better.
Yeah, and I suppose it comes from something like I had a life change, an accident, when I was 21 back in 2007, show my age now. But obviously back then I had to persevere and going back to that whole thing with Toyota starting your apostle. Like, you have to start somewhere. And I look back to then and I often talk about what drives me on, and it's kind of who I affected, and not setting out at that day to harm myself, but I think of who I'm doing it for, and that's I really had to rely on that over the past. I'm doing it for myself as well, obviously there's a selfish element in it as well, but I really had to rely on that over the past 12 months, it's definitely had its challenges.
So Patrick, tell us if you don't mind a little bit about what happened to you. You mentioned that day there where you didn't set out to harm yourself. It was a crash. Do you mind telling us about it?
No, not at all, no. I was going to work. I was an apprentice plumber at the time, and I was only working like 10 minutes from home, and I still remember it like yesterday. I often say this in talk. I can't remember what I'd done 2 weeks ago, but I still remember leaving the house, and like I was on time, but I suppose at that age I driving too fast and not thinking of like potential consequences, and just flipped the car on the way to work, and cutting it short, like I ended up paralyzed. I'd broken a couple of bones on my back, and spent a few months in hospital. So you do a bit of soul searching and trying to work out kind of where you're going to go from there, like, and really, like, it was hard back then to see any form. I was big into sport, like, and it was really hard. That was the hardest thing for me. Like, obviously my job was gone as well, like, but the hardest thing really for me was like I wasn't going to play Gaelic football again, and I definitely didn't see an elite sport opportunity there for me. So it just goes to show, like, really, when you put yourself out there and try and knock down a few barriers, and obviously had great support, like, which is vital as well. But that was a really tough time, but I don't look back with any regret, being honest. This is normal for me now, being in a wheelchair, and it's definitely made me mentally stronger and appreciate things in life maybe that I didn't appreciate before. So look, I kind of look at it, maybe it was meant to be, and as I said, like, no regrets. I'm really kind of content and where I am in life.
Because Patrick, we've all been there, you know, especially young men at that age. And I remember just reading today about your accident, where you said you felt that if you could get out of the car, you could straighten it up and get back even on the road, just showing that, you know, that bulletproof feeling.
Yeah, well, I suppose there's a funny element to that. Is that, like, there was embarrassment where I didn't actually realise, Donica, at the time that I sustained the injuries that I had. And I think I was shocked, and I was probably in the car for a half an hour before, like, the ambulance came on scene. And it was only really then that whatever way I was trapped in the car that I realised that I couldn't get out, like. But so at the stage that I hadn't realised that anything had happened to me, like, there was an element of embarrassment, like, oh, here I am in the village now, people probably see me turning around the car, and I'm after getting what I deserved here. So yeah, I thought, like, be able to flip the car over and continue on into work, but geez, definitely wasn't going to happen that morning anyway. But that was my mentality, like, just try and get on with things. But and that's what I've done.
Well, you definitely sound like you have, Patrick, and it's great to hear such fantastic positivity. So tell us, when did, like, you'd mentioned that you were mad into sport. So when did you think, okay, is there something else that I can do? I need to explore what other options out there from a sporting point of view.
I probably needed a while to, like, really kind of to let things, like, to be honest, to accept what had happened. Like, you're kind of like, I'd say I spent a lot of time when I was in hospital, like, still hoping, like, because I hadn't snapped my spinal cord. I had been just stretched, like, so there was hope there that, look, I'm going to wake up some morning, I'm going to do cartwheels out here. But sport didn't really come across my mind for another couple, back to, I'd say, 2009 and 10. But it was really when I seen the games in 2012, like, I seen wheelchair racing, and David Weir, who I'd consider a friend now, like, and I've seen him winning 4 gold medals, and the decibel level was higher in his, I think it was the 1500 than it was for Usain Bolt. I thought, this is amazing. Like, that's really where I got it from, because the only sports that had been put to me were, like, basketball really was, I suppose, the one that was pushing me. And it's a great sport, but I'm crap at basketball, like, so I would have to travel for basketball as well, like, to join up with a team. So I wasn't going to join basketball just because I was in a wheelchair. So yeah, it was 2012 when I seen wheelchair racing, and got involved in 2013 then. And I suppose I had a thing where I was getting on well in life again, but I really struggled with my self-image after my accident, that I didn't want to be seen in the chair, particularly around home. Like, I didn't mind people that didn't know me in my past, but around my community, I I would have avoided like getting petrol and that in my area because I didn't want people seeing me. So it really helped me in that way that I had to get out. And it's done great things for my confidence over the last few years. That only for it, like I'd probably be still kind of stuck in a rut somewhere. So I owe a lot to the sport. Like,
The sport owes you a lot as well. Back-to-back Dublin marathons, shaving 7 seconds off the Irish record, finishing 16th in Rio. Like, you've really taken to it.
Yeah. And that's again, like, I'm relating back to that starting impossible. Like, I was competitor, but I got involved in 2013. It was really for us. Like, I'm going back to the family thing again. Like, they would have liked to see me getting involved in sport. Like, and then I suppose I was competitive, and it was really for fitness starting off. But I had a competitive edge in me that I was like, I want to see how far I can take this. Like, and yeah, it was like that Dublin Marathon nearly killed me. Like, I ended up doing an extra 2 miles. It took me out on the wrong route. For no helmet on out on the side of the motorway. How are you, lads? But geez, looking back now, you can laugh. But like, it's been great, and I've had great support over the years. That like only for the support I've had, I wouldn't have lasted in the sport either, being honest. So like, I owe a lot to people over the years. Like,
so what's the plan then for you for the next few months?
The plan for the next few months is to keep planning ahead, hoping that there's going to be a Games. It's looking like we will get a Games. Doing, obviously it's going to be very warm in Tokyo for the pale Irishman, so it's not ideal. Like, I'd actually rather like colder temperatures. Like, for doing a bit of heat acclimatization at the moment up in the institute, so in a greenhouse, trying to kind of mimic what we'd be doing in Tokyo. And then it's just really training. Unfortunately, there's no competition for me the last good to be a year and a half now at this stage, but I suppose everyone's in the same boat. So I just keep training. Said hopefully we have a Games, and I might get a competition or two in before then, maybe in the States. But that's it, really. Yeah. I have to keep going and hope that we get the Games at the end of it.
And Patrick, you are a Toyota ambassador. Toyota are an official partner to Paralympics Ireland and worldwide mobility partners to Olympic and Paralympic Games. Toyota's Start Your Impossible campaign celebrates the best of human performance and can be viewed on toyota.ie. It's important, really, I think, to have sponsors at this time, at this juncture, when things are getting serious, you're heading into the Games, and you need all the support you can get.
Definitely, yeah. But one thing I'll say about Toyota, like it's not just, like, you often get a lot of kind of requests or offers, like, in the lead-up to the Games, like, and obviously they were meant to happen last year, but, like, Toyota have been with us since 2017, like, so, like, that's great, like, that they're on board, and it's not just in the Olympic or Paralympic year that they've jumped in there. But definitely, yeah, it's about like any publicity that we can get, because it's not just about us. It's trying to influence like younger people like with disabilities to get anyone really, but like try to get them integrated into communities or sports groups and get involved and like start their impossible really, like, and it's trying to change people's perceptions as well. Look, like that we train as hard as Olympic athletes, so. And I think that is kind of slightly changed. It has changed, but it has a way to go yet. So, like, it's obviously we get benefits from it as well, but it's benefiting a whole load of other people on top of that as well, which is really important.
Definitely, Patrick, because hearing your story, like, I suppose it's difficult sometimes because people get put into boxes as being inspirational or role models, but and that can be a hard thing to carry around, but at the same time, hearing your story will definitely helps people, I'd imagine.
That's what I'd like to think, yeah, and that's a big reason I do it, being honest. So, look, if it helps one person in any part walk of their life, it doesn't have to be sport, like, to like, I'm by no means an inspiration, but like to say, look, persevere, don't give up, like, and things will work out well for you in the end. So, that's a big thing for me. Like, it's trying to give back, like, the people that have supported me. And look, hopefully someone comes along and knocks my Irish records out in a few years' time. Hopefully I get a few years out of it, but it'd be great, like, to see some younger people getting involved, because that's the hardest thing, I think, for a lot of people, particularly with disabilities. It's having the confidence out there to get involved in a sports group or in society itself. So if it helps anyone at all, that's what it's about for me. That's nearly the biggest thing of it all. Like,
yeah, well, Patrick, fair play to you for doing that for everyone that's listening to you now, and continued success. We'll all be shouting an oran for you when you take on Tokyo. Best luck, and thanks for joining us on Game On.
Thanks so much, Danica. Thanks for it.
Thanks.
Game On 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are going to continue our Masters build up with Greg Allen. Greg, how are you?
Very good, Marie. How are you?
I'm a little bit concerned after watching Bryson swinging with DJ Singh watching on. He looked like he's going to do himself a bit of damage.
He looked like DJ Carey.
Bryson, when he swings the golf club, does look like he's going to do himself damage, but that's why he put on all that muscle and bulk, is to try and absorb some of that torque effect, or whatever you want to call it, because when you're swinging the golf club head at over 200 miles per hour, which he regularly does on the practice ground but less so on the golf course, he dials it down to merely 195 miles an hour on the golf course. You're going to put a lot of force through your body, and I don't know, you know, how long is Bryson going to last? You know, he does just go at it. I think he was doing a drill yesterday on the practice range where he was hitting drivers every 10 or 12 seconds at that force, and it was like a workout in a gym.
Hey, Greg, just on that, I saw that clip as well. And sorry, not being harsh, no, but how much of that is actually peacocking, getting the word around the place that, you know, he's this physical specimen, so that there's a little bit of fear factor of him when he hits the course?
Hi, are you feeling like you identify with him at all? That peacocking thing now, tell me more about it. Hey, what do you do in rugby training when you're peacocking?
Well, I always knew it about Jonah Lomu. When you stepped out on the pitch, you know what I mean? There's one or two people that they just have an aura about them, and you could be beaten nearly before you line up.
I think inadvertently you've actually hit the nail on the head. Jonah Lomu changed the entire way that rugby wingers were perceived. You know, 17 stone rugby wing who can run 100 metres in around 11 seconds. And Bryson DeChambeau is pretty much changing the way people are looking at the possibilities of how far the ball can go through the air. Yeah, I think there's a bit of peacocking around. Like, here am I trying to burst the ball outside the practice ground. He think he wants to land one of those practice balls that he's hitting with the driver on the practice ground in Augusta through the window of the media centre, which is 380 yards away. You know, this part of him kind of feels that, it's an exhibition. And by the looks of things, Rory watched him on the practice ground after the US Open and said, I want some of that, and then tried to do it. Of course, Rory's only a sliver of a human being in terms of physical shape by comparison to Bryson, and Rory has probably lost a bit of his game because he tried to do a Bryson. It's a very interesting concept, and you know, Bryson has been talking about this week, you know, because last I think it was November, just before the Masters, he was saying that really Augusta is only a par 67 for him, because he can reduce all the par 5s and make them par 4s effectively, because he can easily hit the greens in two and all of them, and there's one of the par 4s, the third, which he can drive comfortably from the tee, but he's been rowing back on that particular statement this week, much more respectful about Augusta, and this is what he's been saying.
I think I have a good chance to play well here. There's certain holes out here where length does help tremendously, and so as you look at it from a statistical point of view, there is a lot of advantages to be had with length for me. But again, you go up around those putting greens and you know, you try to hit it into those those areas of the green where the pins are, and it becomes very diabolical. And so length is only as good as you can hit your next shot, is what I always say. And that's the most important thing about Augusta National, is that it doesn't test just the driving. It tests your second shots, it tests the third shot, tests you're making for par, you know, you're 4 footer, you're trying to make for par. I think that's what's so special about here, is you have to have every facet of your game working really, really well.
Now, there's a reason why he's so humble, because last November, Bryson didn't play very well in Augusta, and he shot 3 under par for 4 rounds. And he had one player ahead of him, 63-year-old Bernhard Langer, at 4 under, who was the shortest hitter in the field and yet had a better score than Bryson. So he's a good reason for, you know, talking a little bit more humbly about Augusta than he did last November.
What about Rory? I think we mentioned on Tuesday that he's going in a little bit under the radar, but as the week goes on, we're hearing a little bit more from him. He's talking about visiting Tiger. He's talking about his coach. He's starting to kind of come back into our consciousness again.
Is he? This is the thing. You know, We got to go back 10 years. It's now a full 10 years since he had that amazing Masters meltdown when he went into the final round in 2011 with a four-stroke lead, bogeyed the first hole, almost topped his second shot out of the bunker in the second, and suddenly it was all going wrong. And by the time he got to the back nine, he had frittered away his lead and lost the Masters, finished tied for 15th place. And it was an epic meltdown. He took 43 shots in the back nine, shot a final round of 80. And ever since then, he's, you know, been trying to work out how to win at Augusta, and he still hasn't won at Augusta. And he comes in as the world number 12. And a year ago, this time, he was world number one, although there was no Masters. But that's how far he's fallen in a year. So he's changed coach, and this is a big change for him. Pete Cowan is the new man. He's a very well-renowned coach, coached Henrik Stenson, coached Lee Westwood, Darren Clark, even worked a fair bit with Paul Dick Harrington. And Pete Cowan is a highly renowned coach. And the question is, to what degree is this a huge change for Rory? And yesterday he spoke as though it is going to be a very big change.
I feel like there's been a lot of looking back to try to go forward instead of just saying, okay, this is where we are. This is the present. This is what you've got to work with. Let's go forward from here. You know, there's been a lot of, oh, well, back in 14, I did this, or look at this. It's like, well, no, that's a long time ago now, and you can't change the past. You can't, you know, it's not as if you can just magically delve back into it and bring it all back to life. So yeah, Pete and I had a good conversation about that. We, you know, this is me, this is what you got to work with. And, you know, we go from here. So yeah. And I think that golfer going forward is just a little more knowledgeable about what he does and how he swings the club and the movements that he needs to make to basically hit three shots, right? Hit a draw, hit a fade, hit one straight. It's all you need to do in the game of golf. It's not that hard. And I think being a little bit more in control of what I do, playing a little more conservatively, you know, taking the big numbers out of play, maybe taking a couple of more clubs into certain greens and hitting it softer, controlling the ball flight. Yeah, just being a little bit more in control of everything. I think that's the golfer I want to, you know, a few more three-quarter shots, not hitting everything flat out. You know, that's the sort of golfer that I want to be going forward.
Yeah, sounds like a very conservative sort of golfer that he wants to be going forward. So that's a big, big change.
He has me convinced anyway, Greg. Just simple as that. What about Spieth? I know you were kind of fancying him earlier in the week. We're kind of seeing them out now on the practicing on the greens and that. Are you still as confident about him?
Yeah, absolutely. And he himself, you know, has been in really good form since that round of 61 in Phoenix, which was his breakthrough. He's been working away, chiseling away with his coach Cameron McCormick, trying to sort this out for 3.5 years, just why he fell down to number 92 in the world at the start of this year. And there's no question that he's remained loyal to his coach Cameron McCormick and also his caddy Michael Greller. He's kept them on board. He took on board that everything that went wrong over the last 3 years was his fault, but he's worked with Cameron McCormick and he's got himself back. And in this particular last six tournaments on the PGA Tour since the start of the year in stroke play, he's finished top four in six tournaments, and he won last week in Texas. But he himself feels that he's not quite there yet, and yet he knows himself that he's one of the favorites this week.
I like the progress that I'm making. I don't feel that I have the control of all facets of my game that I want to have yet, but I feel like I'm working the right direction. Will that make a difference this week? Don't know, but I'm gonna work at trying to just be a little bit better than I was last week. I just got further off than normally professionals get, and so it's been a climb back and feel on the right path, but there's still a lot of work to go.
So that's Jordan Spieth, and one of the reasons he's the favourite is he was a champion in 2015 when he made 28 birdies around Augusta. That's a record number of birdies around Augusta. He just loved the place. You know, he nearly won in 2014. He was second then. He was had that five-shot lead. I think we spoke about this a couple of days ago on the back nine. And in 2016 when Danny Willett won, he dumped the ball in the water in 12 and then dumped another one in the water in 12. So he doesn't like the 12th hole, but apart from that, he loves the rest of Augusta. And I think Spieth is my favourite this week.
Okay, Greg, we're going to say goodbye, but we'll be back tomorrow checking in with you on all the action. And just before I go, I know nobody ever feels sorry for sports journalists because they have a good old gig, but it must be difficult for you not being over there.
I better not elaborate too much, but yes, it's very, very difficult because it's a wonderful place to cover sport.
Okay, Greg, thanks a million. We'll chat to you tomorrow. Donegal, that is all we have time for. But just before we go, a little bit of breaking news. Irish sprinter Leon Reid has been charged with drug offences in his native United Kingdom. He has appeared before the Bristol Magistrates Court and along with three other men to face charges relating to a police investigation into the large-scale supply of drugs, possession of firearms, ammunition and money laundering. So we'll be keeping an eye on that over the next few days as it unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Laura Lee and Andrew. The fantastic Tara Stewart is up next. We're back tomorrow at 6:00.